You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
And, of course, that was the lovely Paula Zahn coughing in the background.
Sorry,
this is the American.
Cold.
I'm just joking. Do you have a cold?
It's a chest cold. I'm still trying to get over this chest cold that I've had for a couple of weeks now.
Oh, sorry, Paula. See, I didn't even know that. Now I know that. But anyways, I am Mayor Tom Garcia. This is American Hour, and of course, Paula Zahn is back with us. We missed you last night, but you're here, and that's all that matters. So we got a great show lined up. Oh, man, we got so much stuff to talk about, Paula. I mean, it's just the list goes on and on. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I spent the day prepping for this, and I even spent yesterday after the show going through stuff for about an hour. It's amazing the stuff that's going on in our country today. It's just wacky, out of control. And we're here to bring you the news you're not going to get from the mainstream media and or the news that you're going to get from the mainstream media, but you're not going to get the truth. And that's what we are about. That's why this is called the American Hour, because it's about the United States of America. It's about our Constitution, and it's about truth, and it's not about spin. I know somebody's already got that, the no-spin zone, so we're not going to talk about that. But it's about the truth, and it's not about my personal feelings or opinions. It's simply about the truth. So one of the things that we promoted the show, well, not one of the things, but the top items we promoted about the show is, number one, Leon Panetta admits today in congressional hearings that going into Libya was unconstitutional because they're trying to use a different angle now to go into Syria. He admits that, I mean, he didn't say it in so many words. You have to be between the lines. I will. Testimony, and we've got soundbites. Anyways, going to Libya was not constitutional. So what we're going to do is something else, and I'm going to show you how it is precisely. His new tact is unconstitutional. Next, we have a $1 million lotto winner who's on food stamps. We've got that set up. It's like paying for somebody else's food that has more money than you and me. We're going to meet the racist. Derek Bell, the racist and constitutional hating mentor of Barack Obama. And this comes from a clip from Andrew Breitbart. He got a hold of this from a professor at Harvard who, giving a presentation, said, oh, here's a clip, yeah. We edited. Now, he doesn't say this precisely. He says, we covered that up, but now I don't care. Yes. They edited the clip, and the only clip you could get your hands on this did not show Barack Obama warmly introducing this racist and embracing him and asking the people to please listen to him, heed his, recommendations, that kind of thing. We're going to listen to that. That we're going to precisely listen to that, and I'm going to introduce you to Derek Bell, the racist and hater of the Constitution, and foremost, I mean, he is on the same level of Reverend Wright as a racist and hater of the U.S. government. The difference is the Reverend Wright uses Christianity to further his goals of racism, victimization, and Marxism, whereas this gentleman was strictly an academic, a professor, and a pretty bad one at that, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Finally, we're going to finish up with the term caudillo. And some Spanish speakers in some different countries might say it caudillo, but it's most commonly pronounced caudillo, and the D in Spanish is sort of a, it can be a z, it can be a th, it just depends on what country you're in. Caudillo, it could be caudillo, 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 caudillo. Anyway, what does that term mean? Well, that's a Latin American strongman, a dictator. We're going to compare the difference between the Barack Obama administration and the typical dictatorship in Latin America and South America. It's going to scare you. But first, let's go, Paula, to our lotto winner, the woman who won the lottery. And yet, She's on food stamps. Let's listen to this. This is, boy, I should have written down what news station this was that did this in that particular state. But they tracked her down, and they had a hidden camera, and they watched her using a food stamp card to buy food. So they followed her home, and she's unpacking her groceries, and here's how the exchange goes.
Now that she had struck it rich, she was going to buy a new house. This is the home she bought for cash. We also learned she bought a new car as well. Again, what you would expect from a lottery winner. But what else we found, you don't expect. Defender hidden cameras following Amanda, where she later admits to us when shopping, she uses a bridge card to pay for her groceries. She gets $200 a month. $200 from you, the taxpayer. We decided to see what Clayton had to say for herself. I found her recently unloading the groceries out of her car.
Just wanted to find out if you thought that was a right thing to do ethically, or why you're still taking money from the state.
Well, I thought that they would cut me off, but since they didn't, I thought maybe it was okay because I'm not working.
But you won more than $1 million.
No, I won $1 million, right. But after I took the lump sum, it dropped down to $700,000.
Oh,
and then
ooh.
After taxes, it was just a little bit over half.
Don't you think there's something wrong there? Taxpayers are really struggling that really need that money. Just, do you really think you have a right to that money?
I mean, I kind of do. I feel that it's okay because, I mean, I have no income and I have bills to pay. I have two houses.
Oh, Paula, she's got bills to pay, a brand new car and two houses. And she doesn't have a job, but she's got $500,000 in the bank. Well, not $500,000 anymore because she bought a house and a brand new car. So you and I ought to be buying her food. Doesn't that make sense to you?
Doesn't it make what? You're coming in a little broken up.
Okay. Does that make sense to you that we should be paying for her food?
Oh, absolutely not. Somebody's got to pay for my food, too.
Yeah, I want somebody to subsidize my food. I mean, we're talking about the food stamp present. Food stamp usage is up something like 40-some percent. It's astronomical under this president. And now we've got an example of the kind of people that are taking advantage of the system. Wow. Maybe I should go apply. Maybe you should go apply. I mean, who knows? Maybe we, get food stamps. But that wouldn't be the ethical thing to do. And just because she doesn't have a job, well, get a job. Get a job, loser. Oh, my gosh. Get a job. And the fact that you have a house that's paid for, so you don't have a house payment. But she's got another house, too. Well, get a renter in there. Jeez Louise. This is just freaking disgusting. I can't believe these people. It really is. But, you know, along those lines of people that are, you know, taking advantage of the system and, lying to the American people, and let's talk about that woman who testified. Remember, it was a Democrat. It was not a congressional hearing. It was a Democrat hearing. And they brought in a Democrat activist who's been supportive of abortion pills and other things as well. But she believes that you and I should pay for her contraception. She's 30 years old, Paula. 30 years old. Now, Rush Limbaugh got in trouble for calling her a slut and a prostitute. Now, I want to just say this. If it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck, it smells like a duck, it's a duck. So she testifies. She's so busy having sex, she doesn't have time to go 3 miles away to Target, where contraception, if you don't have insurance, is $9 a month. She claims that she has to buy it for $3,000 a year.
Right.
Now, what does that sound like? A woman in a dorm who's hurting for money and is having so much sex, she doesn't have time to leave and go get $9 a month contraception. That sounds like either a slut or a prostitute to me. And then lying and saying that it would cost $3,000 a year, that sounds like a prostitute as well. Prostitutes are con artists. They're really good at conning people out of their money and on and on and on. It's not just about, well, give me this money and I'll give you sex. They work it. They work it to get, I mean, we've seen the stories repeatedly. You see the shows on TV. They're con artists because they need the money. And if they're willing to do that, then they're willing to do anything. So as she's describing herself and her living conditions, how terrible and tough it is, She sounds just like a slut and a or a prostitute. But get this. We got Bill Mayer, the worst comedian ever in the history of comedy. Back before he got political, Paula, I never laughed at the guy. I thought, who's paying this guy to do comedy? He's the dumbest, stupidest loser that I've ever seen trying to do comedy. But Bill Mayer, guess what, calls Sarah Palin, and I'm going to give you the word. It begins with a T. I can't say the word here. It begins with a T, and it rhymes with what? Just like the wattage of your light bulbs. He called her that on TV. Called her that. But that's okay. And do you know what Jay, the dumbass Carney, said today when asked about, well, what about Bill Mayer? He's given the president's PAC $1 million, and he speaks at Democrat events. How come you're not ostracizing him? And he said, well, the comments that Bill Mayer has made in the past don't rise to the level of what Rush Limbaugh said. Look, all Rush Limbaugh was doing was pointing out the obvious. This woman described herself as a slut or prostitute. Bill Mayer, on the other hand, calls Sarah Palin nothing that has to do with anything she's described herself at, any work or efforts that she's done. He describes her as a very vulgar body part. So according to the Obama administration, if you want to call somebody a vulgar body part, that's A-OK. But if you want to suggest that somebody might be what they have just told you they are, oh, that's terrible. Oh, my gosh. Horrible, horrific. These are the biggest lying sacks of you know what and hypocrites in the history of mankind. And there you have the Democrat Party. So what we like to do on this show is talk about the incompetence, the lies, and the unconstitutionality of this administration. Well, there's the lies right there. There are the lies. Now, I realize they weren't in charge of that baloney congressional hearing, that Democrat hearing, that partisan hearing, with a woman who's an activist, an extreme left-wing liberal activist coming in, oh, I can't get contraception. What a lie. So that's a lie, and it's a hypocrisy. And then when you bring Bill Maher into the equation, absolute hypocrisy. He has said some of the most slanderous things against Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. The guy is just sick. If I ever actually see the guy, in fact, I'll tell you what, if he ever gets on one of my airplanes, I'm walking off the airplane, and he can get there somewhere else because the guy is a scumbag. He really is. He's a excrement stain on the sidewalk of life, and I really can't stand the guy. And he's not funny at all. I've never seen him be funny when he's not even talking politics. Okay, so there's one of the lies. Well, let's get into some incompetence. Now, I love this story. I don't love it, but, you know, whatever. Paula, have you ever noticed that whenever Obama is speaking for a product, that product fails miserably shortly thereafter? And they say this guy gives good speeches. What about Solyndra, Evergreen, Solar, SpectraWatt? There's a whole list of his failures if you go to The American Thinker, March 8th, written by Kevin Jackson. Kevin Jackson is great. When Obama visits a factory, it becomes a failure factory. I mean, this guy, he's like that what do you call it, the mythology person that you touch him and you turn to lead or turn to stone. I mean, this guy, everything he touches is just destroyed, absolutely destroyed. If I had a factory and he wanted to come speak, I'd send everybody home. Get out of here. Go. Shut it down. Shut the doors. Get out of here. We don't want him there because he will destroy it. So interesting article, funny article about Obama. And he got into a Chevy Volt and said he wanted to drive it, but the Secret Service wouldn't allow him to drive it. Interesting. The Secret Service wouldn't allow him to drive it. Well, they were probably saving lives, and not necessarily his life, but lives, because the more of these things that tried, remember, they catch on fire, explode, and all that kind of stuff. The fact that GM halted production on the heels of the Obama speech is symbolic of the Obama administration. The demise of the Volt proves that the government shouldn't be in the business of picking winners and losers, and that's exactly it. And so far, this president's record on picking winners, big goose egg. He hasn't picked a single one, but he keeps trying. I mean, what a joke. But, you know, as he continues on in this article, if we're keeping it real, politicians don't pick winners. They only pick losers. It is liberal politicians on both sides who don't believe in free market, which is why liberals pick losers. Liberals love losers because liberals are losers. That's why they love losers. Liberals love experimenting on losers, as if loser DNA will somehow create a winner. Liberals are searching for a taxpayer-funded cure for themselves and the rest of the losers out there. Anyway, great article, Kevin Jackson. so there we have ineptitude. We've covered lies, ineptitude. One of the things I talked about yesterday, Paula, very briefly, and I went through the numbers. Anybody wants to listen to it, go to the show, go to yesterday's show, which would be what the I don't even know what the date is. What's today's date, Paul? I'm trying to pull it up on my computer. And
it was
just
the 7th today.
Okay, good. These crappy computers, you know. As soon as you want to know the date and you hover over the time, nothing pops up. Okay, so on the 7th. Listen to our show on the 7th. But I outlined how this is completely wrong, Paula, that contraception and abortion pills save us money. This is what the left wants you to believe. If we stop these unwanted pregnancies, we're going to save money in the long run. And as I said, this is a quote from last night. Kathleen, the dumbass Sebelius, said this in congressional testimony. So I laid out the numbers, and I'm not going to do it again tonight. But the money it would cost the state, Paula, to raise a child. If, let's say, the state came to you and said, we're going to give you this money to raise this child that covers all costs, food, health care, clothing, additional costs. Raise this child to 18. It's a healthy child. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not a drug baby, any of that. It's just an unwanted pregnancy. We're going to hand you $223,000 to raise this child to the age of 18. And you don't have to pay for college. You don't have to, you know, that's just raise the kid. That's how the costs come out for raising the kid. Now, there are millions of Americans that will take a kid like this with no money from the government. But just in case the government has to pay for all of these unwanted kids, how much money, Paula, do you think a kid from the age of 19 to 60 will pay into the tax system at just a 15% tax rate if they have average income for an American over the course of their life? $369,000. So the bottom line is we are losing money by killing future taxpayers. They try and tell us we're saving money. We're not saving money. We are losing money, if that's the way you want to look at it. I'm not looking at it from a religious aspect. I'm looking at it from purely monetary aspect. We're losing money by killing future taxpayers. So if you want to hear more about that and hear all the numbers, we did that yesterday. All right. Next, Secretary Chu. Let's go back to lies. Secretary Chu testified today that it's not Obama's fault that the price of gas is down or up. The price of gas is up. It's not his fault. He has no control over that. You can't blame the president. Come on. Paula, do you think for 1 minute, if the price of gas were actually falling, that the president wouldn't go on TV and go like, that's all my doing. Look, prices are going down. You can thank me for that. Because didn't he take credit for increased production in the U.S. when, in fact, he has absolutely nothing to do with that? Any increased production we have today is based on leases that were approved 4 years or more ago that have finally kicked in. Yet he took credit for it. This goes to show the lies and the hypocrisy of this administration on the left. They will take credit for something they had nothing to do with. As long as it's good and looks good, they'll take credit for it. But anything bad, oh, no, not our fault, out of our control. You can't blame us. They're liars. I've said it for months and months. We are going to see more lies than we have ever, ever, ever seen coming out of these schmucks. Okay, next up, unemployment. The numbers are coming out tomorrow, and they're going to be up. Gallup has been predicting this for about a month now, and they're saying that unemployment's going to go up to as much as 9.1%. Now, the government will make a, quote, seasonal adjustment of 0.5 to bring it back down, and they did it last year, which is horse pucky. But even if they do that, it's still going to go up at least a point or two. And you know, I'm telling you right now, I'm predicting it. You hear it on the show first. The libtards tomorrow are going to say, well, there's going to be fluctuations. You know, if unemployment goes down just 1 point, Paula, 0.1, not 1%, 0.1, a tenth of a percent, they're out there pounding on their chest. See, we're, the recovery's here. It's here. We're fixing the planet. But if it goes back up 2, 3, 4 tenths, you got to expect some fluctuations. when overall it's been up, 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 and taken a long time to slide back, just a little bit. Those are the more, those are the lies you're going to hear tomorrow. Those are the dancing around, the hypocrisy and lies. The instant anything happens good, they're going to say, oh, it's great. Just like, remember, Paula, 2 summers ago, summer recovery is turning around. It's all turned around. It's all done. Don't worry. It's all behind us. It's not behind us at all, and it's about to go up tomorrow. How about the Keystone? We talked about this before we came on the air. The Keystone pipeline.
Yep.
The administration has been lobbying, actively going to Democrat senators and lobbying them to vote no on the Keystone pipeline. To vote no. But didn't the president, his spokesman, say a week or two ago, oh, no, the president's not against it. We just need to look at it a little bit closer. We just need to be sure we're making the right decision. Well, then why are they lobbying individual senators to vote no? Because they're against it. They're liars. They lie to the American people. This administration is full of lies. So those are the headlines, and those are the reasons why you can't believe the mainstream media. Now, let's get into Leon Panetta's testimony that shows that, again, they're liars, and we're going to talk about the unconstitutionality of precisely what he talks about. Now, this is, unfortunately, we have to play, you know, the whole thing here, and it's about 3 or 4 minutes, so bear with us. But it's just riddled with lies. I mean, it's 4 minutes and 45 seconds. I apologize, but please hang in there. Here we go.
The kind of military action where we want to build a coalition and work with our international partners, then obviously we would like to have some kind of legal basis on which to do it, as we did in Libya.
Now, some sort of legal basis. We worried about international legal basis, but nobody worried about the fundamental constitutional legal basis that this Congress has over war. We were not asked, stunningly, in direct violation of the War Powers Act, whether or not you believe it's constitution. It certainly didn't comply with it. We spent our time worrying about the UN, the Arab League, NATO, and too little time, in my opinion, worrying about the elected representatives of the United States. Do you think that you can act without Congress to initiate a no-fly zone in Syria without congressional approval?
You know, again, our goal would be to seek international permission, and we would come to the Congress and inform you and determine how best to approach this, whether or not we would want to get permission from the Congress. I think those are issues we would have to discuss as we decide what to do here.
Well, I'm almost breathless about that, because what I heard you say is we're going to seek international approval, and they will come and tell the Congress what we might do, and we might seek congressional approval.
No, well,
I want to just say to you, that's a big dish. Wouldn't you agree? You've served in the Congress.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree that that's would be pretty breathtaking to the average American? So would you like to clarify that?
But I've also served with Republican presidents and Democratic presidents, who have always reserved the right to defend this country if necessary.
But you, before we do this, you would seek permission of the international authorities.
If we're working with an international coalition and we're working with NATO, we would want to be able to get the appropriate permissions in order to be able to do that. That's something that, you know, all of these countries would want to have some kind of legal basis on which to act.
What legal basis are you looking for? What entity?
Well, obviously, if NATO made the decision to go in, that would be one. If we developed an international coalition beyond NATO, then obviously some kind of UN security resolution would be the basis for that.
Coalition of, so you're saying NATO would give you a legal basis, and an ad hoc coalition of nations would provide a legal basis?
If we were able to put together a coalition were able to move together, then obviously we would seek whatever legal basis we would need in order to make that justified. I mean, we can't just pull them all together in a combat operation without getting the legal basis on which to act.
Who are you asking for the legal basis from?
If it's obviously, if the UN passed a security resolution as it did in Libya, we would do that. If NATO came together as we did in Bosnia, we would rely on that. So, you know, we have options here if we want to build the kind of international approach to dealing with the situation.
Well, I'm for all for having an international support, but I'm really baffled by the idea that somehow an international assembly provides a legal basis for the United States military to be deployed in combat. I don't believe it's close to being correct. They provide no legal authority. The only legal authority that's required to deploy the United States military is the Congress and the President and the law and the Constitution.
Let me just for the record be clear again, Senator, so there's no misunderstanding. When it comes to the national defense of this country, President of the United States has the authority under the Constitution to act to defend this country, and we will. If it comes to an operation where we're trying to build a coalition of nations to work together to go in and operate as we did in Libya or Bosnia, for that matter, Afghanistan, we want to do it with permissions either by NATO or by the international community.
Well, I'm just stunned. I'm just stunned at the constitutional violations here. I mean, I'm just absolutely stunned. I don't even know where to begin, Paul. Well, I know exactly where to begin. Senator Sessions is asking what legal basis. And he mentions, but you don't consider the War Powers Act. But that's what they based the war. That's what they based going into Libya on, the War Powers Act. Let me tell you what the conditions are for the president to go into another country. And I know people can say, well, we never had boots on the ground in Libya. We had airplanes in Libyan airspace being shot at. I want somebody out there to call in here and tell me that me and an F-18 over Libyan airspace being shot at. It's no big deal. We can afford to lose you, Tom. But boy, a soldier on the ground, now that's a whole different story. As long as there's no soldiers on the ground, we're not there. So don't even try to bring that up. We had airplanes there running combat missions day in and day out for weeks, and then it was on a semi-weekly basis. We were involved and in their airspace. That is the equivalent to troops on the ground. We had troops in the air. Okay, so but even if you don't believe the War Powers Act is okay, and let me back up. The War Powers Act, what's it say? Congress has declared war, number one. Number two, Congress has authorized you. They haven't declared war, but they've authorized the president to go somewhere with the troops. Three, imminent danger to the United States of America. Now, where Leon Panetta has just admitted that the Obama administration lied and violated the Constitution, he said, well, we're going to defend this country. Okay, well, what are we going to defend this country from, Paula? A civil war in Syria? That's a direct threat to this nation? Give me a break. Jeez Louise. So we're not defending the country. And that's where he said, but as in Libya, where we formed a coalition and had international law on our side, there's nothing in the Constitution, Paula, that says that the president can form international coalitions and not talk to the Congress and just go fight wars just because there's a coalition. But here's where the lie comes in. At the time, the Obama administration knew that they could not fit the Libya situation to the War Powers Act, except for one possibility, and that was a threat to the United States. So here's what they said. Instability in Libya could bring terrorist activity in the U.S., so that's how we have a direct threat from the Libya civil war. What a joke. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But let me read to you from the Constitution, just in case Leon the dumbass Panetta hasn't read the Constitution, because he hasn't. He doesn't know what's in it. This is in Article 1, Section 8, the 18 enumerated powers, Paula, that Congress has. The separate branches of government do not share powers. The president, the Congress, and the judiciary do not share powers. They all have separate powers. And here's one of the enumerated specific powers that Congress has: to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and here's the big and, offenses against the law of nations. The law of nations is international law. Congress gets to decide. That's what it says. To define and punish offenses against the law of nations. Congress's power, not the president's. So Leon Panetta admitted that that's what they did. They decided to define and punish the violation against the law of nations in Libya, and they will do it again in Syria when they don't have the power. Only Congress has that power. Now he continues on. We want international permission. And just as Jeff Sessions says, so you're telling me you're going to inform the Congress of what you're going to do. You might ask permission, but you don't need it. And he danced around that, but that's what they did in Libya. And they're about to do it again. Here's the despicable part of it, Paula. We have a president who will violate our Constitution in order to take our young men and women into conflicts that he has no authority to do, no authority to engage in, and risk the lives of our soldiers because it's good for his reelection. What a scumbag. Now, people might say, well, didn't George Bush do that? He got the authority of Congress. I'm not agreeing with going into Iraq. I'm not agreeing with going into Afghanistan. I'm just simply telling you he followed the law. And Hillary Clinton approved it, as did the majority of the Senate and the Congress. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not here to argue whether it was right. But he followed the law. This president is not following the law, and he's risking the lives of our soldiers by violating the Constitution. This is huge. This is. I don't even know what, you know. This is impeachable. This is absolutely impeachable. This is high treason if he does it. He's already done it in Libya, and he's about to do it again. And then he goes on to say, well, where do we get our international authority to do this? From NATO. Well, NATO is the United States of America. I mean, there are a lot of other countries. We lead NATO. We are in charge of NATO. So he's basically saying that the president and the military, our military that leads and pretty much runs NATO, is going to tell us, hey, we better get going. Okay, we're on board. It's us telling us. And then, of course, the UN, the corrupt UN. As long as we can get their permission, it's okay. We don't need to abide by the Constitution or get the permission from the Congress that has the authority. So I don't know. I mean, you know, based on all that, I mean, Paula, you're a big supporter of the troops. What do you think of this?
Well, you know, I concur with you. I mean, the problem is that, yes, it's impeachable, but people are not paying enough attention to say what he's done is impeachable, okay? To whoever is there on the floor or whoever is walking around in the streets, they're not saying, I don't think the country as a whole would turn around and say, what the president is doing is wrong. He's not following the Constitution. But if the president were doing something, I don't know, non-constitutional, meaning whatever, could be anything, then they find him impeachable. So. And as far as sending our troops overseas to fight a war or wars, it's just that's in our nature. That's something that, you know, the soldiers took on when they said, you know, when they took their when they joined, they said, you know, the love and honor of the country.
Right, and they took, but they also took an oath to defend and support the Constitution this president's violating, and he's asking them to go into a conflict that violates the Constitution, which means they would be violating their oaths. He's asking every troop and putting them in harm's way to violate the Constitution, and I think this is just an absolute disgrace. But but they're going to do what they're told. That's what a good soldier does. Anyways, hey, we got a caller from Florida, Bill. Bill, and he says he's a Republican. Tell us what you were thinking about this subject.
I was thinking about the continuous conflicts that we've been involved in, and I am a Republican. I consider myself to be a moderate Republican. I have a large number of very conservative Republican friends, all of whom I respect and like very much. And as a whole, we've all had it with all these fights and losing all our young people and our resources. I think we need to defend the United States when we have to, and not continually become the policemen of the world.
Well, I will say this as a career military officer and fighter pilot in the Navy, I absolutely agree with you. We shouldn't be policemen. If we have a vital interest in Syria, then maybe it's worth considering, but certainly we've got to go to the Congress, and the president has to make the case. And then those
absolutely.
Representatives, those people that represent the very soldiers that are going to have to go fight, and their families and their constituents get to make the decision. But this guy has been unilaterally making decisions. So, yes, I'm opposed to a lot of the stuff that we've done in recent years, whether it's a Republican or Democrat president, and even going back to a Democrat president, Bill Clinton, I was opposed to that stuff. We should not be the policemen unless we have a vital interest that ultimately has something to do with our national security. But this is not about that in any way. This is about the world going, come on, America, save those poor Syrians. Look at what's going on in Egypt and Libya. There's articles out today about how the Libyan government is a sham and it's falling apart. Egypt is becoming an Islamist state. So we go in there to help the poor people, but all we do is make things worse. So, yes, we need to stay out of this stuff and protect ourselves. Absolutely.
And I could not believe – I watched Panetta make that speech. I couldn't believe what he said. I almost fell off my chair.
I couldn't believe it either when I saw that. I was just I was screaming in the house.
Yeah.
I hope my neighbors were all at work in school so they couldn't hear me. But I was just like – I immediately ran to my constitution because I know that the president – first of all, I know the president doesn't have the authority, but I knew – and this is one of those passages that – is kind of, sort of obscure, but it comes into play today, that the Congress has the authority to define and punish offenses against the law of nations. That would be international law.
Yes.
And yet Panetta today says that, well, as long as we've got a coalition and it's approved by, the coalition and the UN or NATO, that's a direct, an absolute direct violation of the Constitution. And we've already done it once in Libya, and now they're about to do it again in Syria. Obviously, if they're even talking about this, they're posturing for it. So, absolutely. I agree with you, Bill. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling
Thank
in.
You.
Anything else you wanted to mention before we go?
Just say hi to my cousin, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Awesome. All right, Bill. Well, thanks. Appreciate you calling in and calling anytime. And any cousin of
okay.
Paul's doing good. Any cousin of Paul's is a cousin of mine. Oh boy. So anyway, so there's the lawlessness and unconstitutionality. Remember, we said we're going to talk about the foibles, the unconstitutionality, and the lies, and we've covered a lot of that today. But we've still got more to go. I mean, this is just I can't believe the kind of stuff that's been going on. But let's get to meet and learn about this. We'll take just a few minutes, and then we're going to go on to the term cagillo, the Hispanic term for dictator, strongman leader, that kind of thing. But we're going to get to meet the racist/constitutional hater, Derek Bell, courtesy of a Breitbart video that was released today. And I have a feeling that the estate's going to be releasing a lot more stuff. The libtards are going to go, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. Oh, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. So I've got, let's see if I can find that here. That it's not real long, and it's really just Obama introducing this racist professor at Harvard. Now, I have to give you a little background. Up to a certain point, he could not get into Harvard as a professor. He tried and tried and applied, but he just wasn't a very good professor. He wasn't very smart. His qualifications weren't high enough. Then he started playing the race card, and they hired him because he played the race card. But he was highly underqualified, and that's the only reason he got hired, so I'll say that. But let's take a listen to this audio where the president may be a little tough to hear because it's not a direct – it's something that was being played in this other professor's Harvard class, and we'll listen to what he has to say about this video himself, another friend of the Obama Marxist regime.
Open up your hearts and your minds to the words of Professor Derek Bell.
Okay, stop that for a second. Okay, open up your hearts and minds to the words of Professor Bell. The words are the words of a Marxist. and a victimization the specialist and somebody who hated the Constitution. And I'm going to read through precisely why he hates the Constitution and why he believes in socialism versus liberty and freedom. But let's start it over again.
Open up your hearts and your minds to the words of Professor Derek Bell.
Now, what makes this so interesting when you think about it, of course, we hid this throughout the 2008 campaign, so no, I don't care if they find it now, but right, because it just told you that his growth had been astronomical in the terms of his sense about race in a very complex world, trying to deal in the world of the law review, world of Harvard Law School, etc.
We hit it. Wow. So how much other stuff do you think that the liberals and the mainstream media have hidden about this Marxist, racist president? And I'm calling him a Marxist. I'm calling him a racist because he is a racist. We played clips on other shows. We're not giving that right now. But let's take a look at who Derek Bell really is. Well, he was a huge Farrakhan supporter. If there's ever been a racist, a black racist in our time, it's Farrakhan. Author James Traub voiced his opinion in a 1993 piece on the professor. He said, Derek Bell's bottom line, if it comforts whites, it's bad. If it comforts blacks, i.e. Farrakhan, it's good. So in other words, he was not saying that he really truly believed in what Farrakhan had to say, but if it makes blacks feel better, it's a good thing. It can be full of lies. It just doesn't matter. Let's make blacks feel good. Bell, along with Farrakhan and so many others, offer victimization as a consolation. And that was the Church of Reverend Wright, based on black liberation theology, which is a blending of Marxism and victimization, along with, and this is the despicable part, Christianity. It's an abomination upon Christianity. So what is racial realism that this so-called professor at Harvard talked about? It's a little bit hard to follow. We'll just move through it, and I'll talk about what the important parts are. But the imperatives of the realist attack were at least two. First, to clear the air of beguiling but misleading conceptual categories, so that thought could be redirected towards facts. Now, they always talk about facts, 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 when there are no facts and they're lies. But anyways, I digress. If social decision-making was inevitably moral choice, policymakers needed some ethical basis upon which to make their choices. And second, the realist critique suggested that the whole liberal worldview, when we say liberal, we're not talking about modern liberals. We're talking about founding father liberalism, which is personal property rights and personal liberty, individuality. So here we go. The realist critique, and we're talking, he's a realist about what's real, what's really out there, and that is, and we'll get to in a second, that racism is rampant in America and it can never be changed. That's the realist view. Therefore, we've got to fight the so-called racist realists, or the racists that will always be racist, no matter what generation, because that's the culture of the white. And we will lie, we will do whatever it takes. But anyways, the realist critique suggested that the whole liberal worldview of private rights and public sovereignty, mediated by the rule of law, what would that be in our country? The Constitution, the rule of law, needed to be exploded. The realists argued that a worldview premised upon the public and private spheres and is an attractive mirage that masks the reality of economic and political power. In other words, our worldview, Paula, of the Constitution and personal and private sovereignty is just a mirage. It's not really true. It's a lie. Our founders lied to us, and the Constitution lies to it. Bell's usage of the word liberal here is deceptive. He's not talking about modern liberalism, but instead about classic liberalism, a philosophy associated with John Locke, John Stuart Mill, and even the founding fathers. Unless this is unclear from the above quote, consider this set of remarks further on in the same article. As every civil rights lawyer has reason to know, despite law school indoctrination and belief in the rule of law, abstract principles lead to legal results that harm blacks and perpetuate their inferior status. Racism provides a basis for a judge to select one available premise rather than the other when incompatible claims arise. A paradigm example presents itself in the case of Regents of the University of California versus Bake. relying heavily on the formalistic language of the 14th Amendment and utterly ignoring social questions about which race, in fact, has power and advantages. The court held that an affirmative action policy may not unseat white candidates on the basis of their race. By introducing an artificial and inappropriate parity. All right, this gets boring. In other words, but here's the bottom line of what he's saying. Bell could care less about what the law actually says. As far as he's concerned, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. He wants to base reality on race, and therefore he's a racist. So there's your introduction to Derrick Bell, the racist and Constitution hater, who Barack Obama very warmly introduced at Harvard and asked people to open their hearts and minds. Open your hearts, open your minds to these concepts of racism and anti-rule of law. So that just came out today, big news. I know the liberal media will try and downplay it, but it's big news. It's just one more example of his racism and hatred for the Constitution that was portrayed in the 2008 election when we found out he had spent 20 years in Reverend Wright's church listening to racism and anti-government, anti-rule of law. Now, the final one, and this is a good one, and we'll just kind of buzz through this. It's easy to buzz through this, but it's quite a good article. Again, out of the American Thinker, came out today, written by Mark Hendrickson. The Spanish term Caudillo refers to a strong man or autocratic leader. Have you ever heard that term before, Paula?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it was. It originally came about, I looked it up, it originally came about from one of the dictators in Latin America. Now I can't remember his name, but he continues on in his article. Some have been right-wing, i.e. anti-communist, pro-American, such as Somoza in Nicaragua. Others left-wing, socialist, anti-American, like Barón Chávez. But since Jimmy Carter used his one-term presidency to achieve the extinction of the pro-American species, today's Caudillos are all leftists. Caudillos typically bulldoze political opposition, become the dominant force in the economic life of the country, and establish a personality of cult around themselves. Is this starting to sound familiar at all? They love power as much as they love themselves, and they aren't bashful about using their power in defiance of precedents, constitutions, and democratic principles. Until a couple of years ago, I never dreamed that a Caudillo could arise in our Anglo-American legal system, upwardly mobile culture and enlightened constitutional order, but today it seems to be a distinct possibility. Consider the similarities between Barack Obama and the prototypical Latin Caudillo. Number one, demonizes the rich. I mean, this goes back to the Spanish conquistadors. And if you want to read all, I'm not going to read all of the defining information because it's long, but number one, demonizes the rich. Two, employs populist rhetoric about being the champion of the workers. Oh, yeah, I'm the champion of the workers. Although unemployment is about to go up tomorrow, but he's a champion of the workers. Depletes the national treasury and impoverishes the country. Now, we've seen this happen. I mean, look at Cuba. Look at Venezuela now. Look at Bolivia. Depletes the national treasury and impoverishes the country. How high has our national debt gone, Paula, in the last 3.5 years under this president? $5 trillion. No president has ever increased the debt in one term that much. George Bush, under George Bush, the national debt went up, I think, $4 trillion in 8 years. Obama's done it in 3.5 years, $5 trillion. Oh, but we brought the country back from the brink. No, this is about depleting the national treasury to impoverish the country through heavy taxes and depreciation of the currency. Why is the price of gasoline and food so high now? Because the dollar is worth significantly less than it was. Bailouts, green boondoggles, not that was not part of the stimulus plan. Obama, show Obama to be the master of these tactics. Number four. Knows that money is power and so grabs de facto control of capital and banks. How about Barney Frank Dodd bill? Obama is so anxious to get zealot Richard Cordray up and running as the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau with unspecified and arbitrary power. Money, money, money. Number five, asserts heavy control over private business. Now, you can just say this. Well, you're just making stuff up that Obama's doing. Well, yeah, he's been doing it, but I've seen this occur. over the last 15 years in many Latin countries, and I know the history of Latin America and South America, and this is precisely what has occurred under all of these so-called elected but dictatorships that exist. Number six, bypasses legislature and rules by decree. Just look at the czars, who have more power than cabinet members and the EPA. Seven, chafes at constitutional limits on his power. Obama complained to NBC's Matt Lauer, "What frustrates people is that I have not been able to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. And then he makes unconstitutional pseudo-recess appointments. They weren't pseudo-recess. I disagree with the author here. They were not recess. Congress was not in recess. So that made it unconstitutional. Eight, rides roughshod over long-established legal principles. For example, the bailout of Chrysler and GM and stiffing the secured bondholders that are always supposed to come first. Nine, betrays his populist support by forging lucrative alliances with select members of the big business establishment. Look, he's all about, you know, he's got his populist supporters in the liberal left, but then he's forged alliances with who's the head of his jobs or economic committee? The CEO of GM. They've outsourced more in the last decade to other countries than any company in the U.S. So these are the people that want to stay on his good side, healthcare providers, automakers, and others. And it's all outlined in Tim Carney's book, Obamanomics. Good book if you want to look that up. Number 10, aggressively uses his power to harass, weaken, and punish those who don't support his political agenda. And I've got three examples of that. Number one, Obama grants waivers and exemptions from the onerous financial burden of Obamacare to his allies while leaving them in place to crush his opponents. Exhibit B, Team Obama won't modify Sarbanes-Oxley and uses Dodd-Frank as a hovering threat, makes life difficult for venture capitalists. All policies that have the effect of squelching the development of small entrepreneurial companies and key Republican constituencies. Number three, the Obama administration dragged its heel, and this is well-documented, even in the liberal press, dragged its heels to avoid expediting federal aid to disaster-stricken states with Republican governors, specifically Texas, Virginia, and New Jersey. 11, has delusions of grandeur. Remember when he made the boast after he got elected that his election would stop the rise of the oceans and begin the healing of the planet? What a deluded schmuck. Number 12, has an outsized ego and manifest narcissistic behavior that causes him to take great offense to anybody that disagrees with him. For example, Governor Jan Brewer in their recent airport meeting. 13, is notorious for vote tampering and fraudulent elections. Now, we can't say that the Obama administration is behind that, but they're doing everything they can to ensure that it does occur when it comes to states that are passing laws designed to reduce voter fraud. He and his Attorney General, Eric Holder, are literally waging a jihad against states that want to require identification. And any American citizen can get it. You can go to your local library and get a state identification card for free. No, that's discrimination. You know what it's discrimination against? It's discrimination against me, who's a legitimate voter. So that's – and they do it in different ways in these other countries. They just have – you saw it recently, I think it was in Iran, where people were coming out and voting, you know, dozens and hundreds of times, same person. 14, eventually precipitates a confrontation with Christians and particularly the Catholic Church. And this has gone on in many, many Latin American countries. A confrontation with Christians and the Catholic Church. Since the ego of the Caudillo can't abide people regarding anyone else, even the creator of the universe, as the supreme authority, nor can he tolerate anyone placing obedience to religious convictions and God's rules above his own grand social engineering plans. And now we see that with Obama attempting to impose health insurance requirements that are objectionable to many Christian Americans. So does it sound kind of familiar there, Paula?
It does.
I mean, here we are. When I read that, it kind of made me realize Mr. Hendrickson is absolutely right. I've noticed those things kind of on an individual basis, but I mean, a selected, you know, this is going on, that's going on, but I never pieced it together quite the way he did. There are 14 very good examples of a typical Latin American strongman, and in other countries as well, but particularly in Latin America and South America, where they do have somewhat democratic constitutions and societies. That's how these leaders gain authority and maintain absolute control with authority. So last thing I'll say is on Twitter, I've been doing some Twittering lately, and I got some good stuff there. All the stuff we've talked about tonight there is pretty much there. A few other things, good article on the EPA endangers human health and welfare. The article we just talked about, Obama is the U.S. version of a strong Latin American strongman. Here's a very good article. Is Black History Month teaching racism? You know, we didn't have time to go over, Paul, but you said somebody sent me a tweet or sent it to the American Hour saying, hey, what do you think about this? You know, are we just perpetuating racism with this sort of racist Black History Month? What about White History Month? And is Black History Month an opportunity to explain to kids that, you know, this is a racist country? You know, I saw an article today about a kid in a class raising his hand to answer a question about Black History Month, and the teacher, a Black teacher, saying, well, what would you know about Black history? You're not Black. That was headlines today in one of the newspapers. And then I've sent out some tweets from some other people, very good. You know, Theodora Stanov, what if government treated eating the way it treats sex? In other words, Paula, you know, we've got the left saying that every woman has a right to contraceptives and abortion pills and abortions. Well, you do, but you pay for it. But they're not. They're going a step further. Since they have a right to those things, we've got to pay for it. Well, Paula, I think that you and I have a right to food. I don't think anybody would argue we do not have a right to eat, because we'll die if we don't eat. I think if you don't have sex, you won't die. Sometimes I feel like it, but I don't think you're going to die. I'm getting in trouble like Rush Limbaugh, right? Hey, but I didn't call anybody any names. Everybody has a right to food or you die. So who's going to pay for that, Paula? I don't want to pay for it. Wouldn't you like somebody else to pay for all your food? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. We already did an article on that. We are paying for somebody else's food.
Yeah,
so the government is already kind of treating it that way. But anyways, there's some good stuff there that I tweet out, and sometimes I retweet other people's stuff because they're very, very good. And, you know, then we've got our own stuff we put on there. In any case, I'm done for the night, Paul. Is there anything else you want to talk about before you take us out?
Bet you are. No, I'm pretty good. I think my brain is a little bit overflowed with everything that's been going on in the last couple of days with the Super Fat Tuesday, as I like to call it.
Yeah. All right, well, it's all yours, Paula.
Oh, thank you. We're going to continue our series with honoring the fallen, where the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have claimed the lives of more than 450 Americans, bringing the U.S. death toll to more than 6,300 since 2001. Five names that I'm going to read from the list: Tara Renice Brown, 33, Frank Deal Bryant Jr., 37, Lauren Miles Buffalo, 20, Brian Allen Burgess, 29, Scott Hamilton Burgess, 32. Recently marking March the 1st of this year, Army Staff Sergeant Jordan L. Bayer lost his life, 25 years old, of Denver, assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment, 4th Brigade Combat Team, 82nd Airborne Division, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, from wounds caused by small arms fire in Kandahar Province, Afghanistan. Also killed in the incident was Private First Class Peyton A. Jones. Well, he was 19. Peyton was 19 of Marble Falls, Texas, and he was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, same Parachute Infantry Regiment, 4th Brigade Combat Team. Same day, Marine Corporal Connor T. Lowry, 24 of Chicago. He was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 11th Marine Regiment, 1st Marine Division, 1 Marine Expeditionary Force, Camp Pendleton, California. He lost his life on March the 1st while conducting combat operations in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. February 25th of this year, Army Staff Sergeant Ahmed Altay, 41, of Ann Arbor, Michigan, was assigned to Provincial Reconstruction Team Divisional Training Center Special Troops Battalion 4th Infantry Division, Fort Hood, Texas. He died in Iraq after being kidnapped in Baghdad on October 23, 2006. He was declared missing, captured on December 11, 2006. The Armed Forces ME at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware positively identified his remains last month. To all those serving overseas, your families love and miss you dearly, specifically to the Navy. You know, we keep all of you in our hearts and in our prayers. Last evening, unfortunately, I'm not remembering, if I'm saying it right, the battalion that came in. I want to say it's the 49th from the Rhode Island National Guard had come in last night, and their families were very happy to have them home from their exercises. Again, you know, you see a soldier out on the street having coffee or doing whatever, make sure you go up to them, shake their hand. And thank them. Thank them for what they're doing, because what they're doing is for you.
Amen. All right, Paula, thanks.
Hey, you're welcome.
It. You have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm technically on vacation, but I'm just going to be working on some of this stuff and a few other things. Oh, let me throw out there. I meant to say it at the beginning of the show. We're still working on a fundraiser for Joan Flowers. We're looking for a company, maybe even a military contract company, who would like to meet at the Orlando, one of the Orlando. There's several in the area. There's one that's very big. VFWs to hold the fundraiser, pay for the food, and all the folks that come to attend it. We get a lot. And we will get politicians there, and that's the big draw. With an election coming up, we're going to get state and U.S. representatives there. So it's an opportunity for a company or companies to meet directly with some of the representatives at the state and federal level. And all of the money that the folks come in to have burgers and fries and whatever it is we come up with for a luncheon, all that money will go to the Joan Flowers fund to get her father moved from an unmarked grave to Arlington. And he's a World War II war hero. So we'll be talking about that more next week. I'm still trying to round up somebody to be a sponsor for that. But anybody out there listening knows if someone has some ideas, don't hesitate to let us know. You can reach us on our webpage. If you go to usaradionetwork.com, that's usaradionetwork.com. Go to the American Hour page. We've got Twitter. You can link to us, Facebook, and also email, as well as a text message phone number. You can text a message to that phone number. It will come directly to my cell phone. And help us out if you can. But in any case, that's all we've got for tonight. We'll be back next week on Wednesday and Thursday again. Thanks for joining us. Paula, have a great weekend. And
thank
we'll you. See you next week.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Night.